Hi, this is Lou Ann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network. Hello, this is Lou Ann Bird with Bird on a Wire, and I'm here with a couple of guests today, and we're going to talk about motherhood for good. So I'll allow you guys to introduce yourselves here.
Yeah, I'm Kate Duffy.
I'm Erin Phillips.
And tell us a little bit. I was introduced to this group during my campaign. And I believe at one time you were Mothers for Mandela. And I heard about all these groups that formed out there, right?
Yeah. Should we start at the beginning?
Yes. Okay. Please go back. And so anyway, that's how I got to know them. And I think it's a wonderful story of hope and action. And these young moms are out there trying to save democracy for all of us. So tell us your stories. That would be great.
Yes. Yeah, we're out there trying. So yeah, this is Kate. We did initially form as a group called Moms for Mandela back in, I think, June of last year. It was actually before the primary. I had never really been that politically active before beyond your basic voting and donating and doing a little bit of research and things like that. But mostly paid attention to kind of top of the ticket races and didn't really get that involved. And then I became a mom and everything kind of changed. Uvalde happened, and it was the first time. It was devastating for everybody in our country, obviously. And it was the first time a school shooting like that had happened since I became a mom. And it just devastated me. And then I was watching everything so closely, and to see the politicians' reactions after that and the such clear delineation between the two parties and how they approached that, the empathy they either had or lacked, the solutions they were putting forth. I mean, I'm just sitting there looking like just distraught watching Ted Cruz talk about, well, all schools maybe just need one door. And I thought, I have to like do something about this. I have to get involved. We can make policy change by stepping up, making phone calls, trying to get a seat at the table. And I knew I had to do something. And then a couple weeks after that, the Dobbs decision came and Roe was overturned. And obviously, living in Wisconsin, that meant our reproductive rights were immediately stripped back overnight. So if there was ever any like some signs to like get up, get mad and do something, it was a lot of things all at once. So I decided, I knew this Senate race in Wisconsin at that time was going to be really, really important for Wisconsin and for our country. I did a lot of research and knew pretty early on that I was going to support Mandela. I really liked his platform, his energy, his enthusiasm, his compassion he brought to the table. And I didn't know what to do, but I know social media. I work in marketing. That's my day job. So I understand kind of messaging and things like that. So I was just like, well, I'm going to start an Instagram account called Moms for Mandela. And maybe I can create some messaging around this campaign to try to get my friends and other moms and women like me involved in this race and try to explain to them in simpler terms what it means, what's at stake, how races like this and elections like this can actually impact their everyday lives, how parenthood is so inherently political, and try to tie those things together and create messaging that felt different than all of like the typical political messaging that was already out there. Felt a little bit more bite-sized, accessible, approachable, things like that. So I started this Instagram account. I thought that was all it was ever going to be. and then I signed up for my first ever canvassing shift, which, you know, like I had never done that before either. My heart was like beating so fast on the way there. I was like, I can't believe I had to go knock on people's doors, strangers' doors, and talk to them. I don't even know what I'm talking about. But I met somebody from Mandela's campaign there and was talking about this. And I have to give the campaign credit because from the very beginning, they like were so accepting of the coalition we were building, the work that we were doing, what we brought to the table. They, you know, pulled up a seat at the table for us and totally trusted the messaging that we were putting out there, the approach that we were doing. And we're just so happy to have, I think, just younger people engaged in this race and engaged in politics.
How did you become a we? There was just you?
So there was just me.
And then what happened?
And then I think I met some people from his campaign who talked about starting to do a little bit more community events and things like that. And I think that's where I met you, Erin, and some other people as well.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. Okay, I for sure remember the first event, Monster Mandela event that I went to, and it was because I had actually just moved here from out of state and was following the Senate race before I moved. And I've lived in Wisconsin before, so I sort of knew the political landscape here and knew I wanted to get involved and helping support whoever was going to be the nominee. But similarly to Kate, I was really following Mandela's campaign, learn about Monster Mandela. So I remember very much that first event that I went to. There was a meet and greet with him organized by the coalition. And actually, you weren't there. I think, like, you were sick or somebody was under the weather, because that's what right, having yeah. toddlers means, is somebody's always sick. So I don't actually know when we met. Because right. then we met on a bunch of virtual meetings, because all of the folks who stepped up to kind of get involved on maybe a like behind the scenes planning level, we would have all those planning meetings.
Yeah.
So like we met on the screen.
Well, yes. And I started having so many conversations with people in the DMs. I thought I was just going to be making some informative posts and putting them out on Instagram. And people started following and sharing and writing me messages and saying, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I needed. I want to get involved. So I started forming a lot of actually relationships just in the DMs on Instagram. And then, yes, we started having some meet and greets that we kind of coordinated with the campaign on. We started doing open canvassing events where we would go canvass at like farmers markets and things like that. And there were actually a lot of people involved. And
how many about?
I mean, I think like, so the account was only up for a few months. And at the end, I think we got up to like 1,800 followers, which were all like Wisconsin-based people.
Oh my goodness.
And in terms of people who were actually, we had different like leaders around the state in different areas. And we would have like leadership meetings and talk about strategy and meetups in those different areas. And at one point, I think there were over 100 women involved from over a dozen counties that were actually involved, like coming on calls, helping plan these meetups, helping organize with what we were doing and our materials in their own area. So we almost like had all these little mini chapters all over the state really quickly.
Wow.
And people were just ready to get mobilized. Yeah.
So where did you get your materials from? Were they from the campaign or did yes. you make your own?
Well, you used Mandela's stuff.
Yes, for physical materials. Sure. Yeah. For everything that we created, like for social, we created that, all of that content. But anytime we had literature or any other materials or that, we got that from the campaign. Yeah.
So you live in
Greendale,
and Erin lives
in... I live in Tosa.
So, right here, we're from all over the state.
Yeah. And so, I mean, Kate, talk about the evolution from Moms for Mandela to motherhood.
Yeah, so you knocked out a lot of doors. Did you make phone calls? Did you distribute literature?
We did.
You did all of that?
All of that.
We did. However, we also found, like, a lot of our core audience is young moms, right?
Yeah.
It's a very busy group of people.
Okay.
Moms already do so much, which actually I think was part of the success of how quickly it got mobilized, because they're like the world's best organizers already. The moms have these networks. They know how to get stuff done. It was like this whole team of people just pulled up and they were like, what do we need to do?
But you knew early on, I mean, part of your vision around both Monster Mandela and Motherhood for Good, and something that I always was so inspired by, is you saw, you know, eagle-eyed in on, okay, moms are master organizers. If you want something done, you know, it's like a known saying, right? Ask a mom. But they can't, we can't discount moms because they can't maybe show up to that event.
Right.
Let's meet them where they are, which is in online spaces and communities.
Yes.
And you saw that and knew it and saw that, especially on a platform like Instagram, there was an opportunity that wasn't being tapped into yet.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw that and ran with it.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, like another component of like the early kind of magnetism around the group, both as Monster Mandela and then growing into Motherhood for Good, where it was a space where we could form a community, not always in person, though sometimes in person at events or at actual campaign events, but also like let's talk in the DMs,
mm-hmm.
when like after the kids are in bed or wherever, like let's be able to access this community in a way that works for moms, or not necessarily moms but younger people, or people who want to get involved. And I just think like that's such a key component, and so it's kind of, it's, you know, it's why the focus has always been, right, kind of split between like, yes, we want there to be in person,
mm-hmm.
Like in-person opportunities for both community building and action.
Yes.
But also, like, part of the whole point is mobilization of online platforms and communities.
Yeah, we definitely took a different approach to mobilizing our audience than like the traditional political outreach. So we did still have those in-person events, but it's hard for these people to show up. So we really focused on relational organizing and creating content that people felt comfortable resharing to their networks and starting to talk about politics with their networks. We said, you know what, if you can't show up to Canvas, that's okay. When you pull up to daycare at the end of the day, ask a couple parents if they're ready to vote, if they have any questions, who they're voting for. That's sometimes just as important, if not more important, than going to knock on a few doors. It's kind of the same thing in just a little bit of a different format. So we really try to come at it from a few different angles.
And, you know, also, like, the piece of this that is not merely access of time, right, limited time for moms and parents, but maybe an uncertainty or an unfamiliarity with getting involved in political activities. And so the idea of basically trying to like demystify how a person can have impact in this work, and that it doesn't necessarily have to be canvassing,
yeah.
and could be these other sort of relational organizing or other outreach efforts, and that maybe that can help foster more comfort, mm-hmm. in further engagement and more traditional political organizing. I think that's a huge piece of this, because I mean, I know especially, well, I think I can safely say we were both in this category, and a lot of the people who I've met working in this work, there's just a sense of like, I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know enough how to talk about this or what's going on. I don't trust that I'm actually up to date, or I don't understand that thing that just happened. Like, so we're here trying to kind of help say it's okay. and yes, you do know, and here's some bite-sized information to help it become more accessible, so that people are just more comfortable talking about it.
A good segue to that is, you know, you mentioned you messaged different. So how did that happen? I mean, what did you do different? Because I found that to be difficult for me as well when I ran for public, mm-hmm. office. I did not use typical messaging. I used my own. I just,
yeah.
said, this is who I am and this is what I care about. And civility was a big platform, because I understood what I was getting into. Politics is negative. It's broken. It's not working for us. So what can we do to fix that? So I think that's kind of the same thing you're saying. But my question is, how did you, I mean, you had a sense of that when you started this,
mm-hmm.
and you wanted to do your own messaging. So tell What did you do different in messaging that you think worked?
I think sometimes politicians and people in the political space assume that people remember more about how the whole system works than they do. You know, like, we don't all remember the Schoolhouse Rock days, and sometimes I think people need a little bit of a reminder and just, like, need to talk about some things in some basic terms. Like, a lot of my friends and stuff, everybody knows the word gerrymandering, but a lot of people don't really understand what that means. Okay. They need a reminder, and just so many different things like that. And also just talking about how different types of elections affect different parts of your life. Of course, the presidential election is, you know, about as important as they get, but Congress, your representative and your senators, those are the people that make the laws, and similarly at the state level. So that has arguably almost a larger impact on your life. And so I think it's just having those reminders. Also, a big part of our messaging is giving simple actions with, like, anytime we're talking about different news, even if it's not great news, it's like, are you mad about this? I know. Here's what we can do about it.
And what? Give me some examples. Like, do what?
A lot of what we do is, like, action on legislation. So a lot of different gun legislation for, you know, reproductive rights, things like that. We'll kind of go over a bill that's been introduced, kind of like what we did, you know, at the Gun Violence Prevention Day of Action. And we'll just break down the bill in simple terms because, again, those are extremely legal, nuanced documents. Most people aren't going to pull it up on congress.gov and read through the bill. Mm-hmm. So if we can provide kind of just the highlights and the summary of the bill in, like, nicely designed format that's digestible, and then tell them what it means, give them the context, and give them a script. Say, all right, you're going to call your two senators and your one congressperson. Here's how to find them. Here's the link. Here's the script. Go ahead and call them. And our hope is that people start there, and then after a while they get more comfortable, they can stray away from the script a little bit and make it a little bit more personalized. And then, to Aaron's point, maybe then they decide to pick up a door knocking shift once they're a little bit more comfortable calling and leaving voicemails. And it's kind of like building that pipeline and bringing them along.
And also, okay, well, so first I want to back up a little bit, and this will be like my first Kate fangirl moment, maybe, is like I'll play it up because I know she won't. Kate's sense of how to distill what information from these really complicated, like, definitely really complicated bills or legislation, but even just like concepts, like maybe it's not legislation, but it's what's going on in an election or what's going on with that politician or something. Your ability to distill what is actually the crucial messaging to get across to our audiences is astounding and always has been. And I think is a real, I don't know, just like a fixture of why what we're doing is working. Because then it's also matched with, like your sense of how does this need to actually visually come across? It's not just the language, but how does this visually need to come across to the audience? Like, the whole package, like, the vision around it, like, that's Kate. So just, like, to dispel any confusion, that's Kate. And it's really, like, I think it's so, so much a part of why everything is working the way it is and why it's having the impact that it's having.
Tell me about the impact it's having.
Well, this verges into a bit of the growth that occurred post-election. So, I mean, I feel like you tell this narrative really well.
So what did it feel like to lose that election after all your efforts?
Horrific.
I was honestly heartbroken. It was definitely my first, like, true political heartbreak. Even I was, of course, heartbroken in 2016 after that happened. But this felt much more personal. We got to know Mandela and his team really well. We put so much time and effort into it. I mean, we were doing this. I didn't put my kid to bed for months because we were always doing something every night. We were so invested, and there was so much at stake. So it was really, really tough.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it felt really draining, right? Not like, oh, everything we did was in vain, because obviously that's not true. And was it what any of us were, I think, what any of us were thinking. But, you know, when you're so passionate about something and you feel the conviction so intensely that the thing you're fighting for is the right thing, and then it, and then you watch it slip away. It's just, it's like, it's really brutal. And you watch it slip away so closely.
Yeah. And it was so damn close. And I know your race was so close too. I know you probably
know the feeling.
You had the double, you know.
I mean,
Hi, this is Luann Bird, and you're listening to Bird on a Wire, where we are having conversations about hope, civility, and action. Thank you for listening on the Civic Media Network.
So, like me, these ladies did not sit around after that election. Tell us what happened next.
Yes. Well, we did know that we were going to do something after this, no matter what happened, because we just knew we had to build on this momentum. I didn't think it was going to be quite so fast, but I think we all got on the phone a couple days later, honestly. And so we came up with this new approach and started Motherhood for Good, I think, a week later.
What's the new approach?
Well, it's a similar approach, just with a broader audience, broader messaging, not as squarely focused on one election. You know, a space that has the same concepts of messaging and community and sustainability in politics, but highlighting different elections that really could make a difference, different campaigns and what they're doing, different legislation, both at the state level and the federal level, and really just like branching out a little bit. So we still have, and we've grown very quickly since, I guess, we started that in November. So it hasn't even been a year yet. And we've grown our community to like over 11,000 people on Instagram. Many are in Wisconsin, but many actually are all over the country. And by the way, the Supreme Court race was like right on the heels of the midterm.
We
pivoted to that.
Yeah, we did too. Knocking on doors.
Yeah, we didn't really get much of a breather here in Wisconsin.
No, that came right up. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think that underpinned the sense that we should get to it.
Yes.
Like, so you renamed yourself in a week, and then you were out there for Janet.
Yep.
And you grew to 11,000 members now. Mm-hmm. How do you become a member, by the way?
It's a very organic term. Like, I say that as in, like, those are the people that follow the account and share things and stuff like that. We also have email signups on our site, and this is like a to-do for me and us. We need to start getting out like our regular newsletter and stuff, and we are going to start having meetups around different areas and trying to figure out a way to put people in different areas in contact with each other so they can kind of have these smaller cohorts or coalitions. So anybody can be a member. What that means is, you know, TBD is we're winging it, you know. That's just the name of the game with us right now. We all work full time, so
we're learning as we do.
How do you know this? You're having an impact.
Yes, and we do know we're having an impact, and it was pretty cool to see with the Supreme Court race. That was actually a bit of a different beast. That was such a shift from talking about a very partisan Senate race to a, I'm using air quotes, what is supposed to be a nonpartisan Supreme Court race, and still trying to talk to people with progressive values without talking about Democrats or Republicans. And, you know, the policies that were at play here, it's just different with the Supreme Court race. Then it's not, you can't be as cut and dry as they support this policy, they'd vote for this, or anything like that. So you have to be a little bit more general. And it, a lot of it was about democracy and gerrymandering. So we had to spend a lot of time really breaking that down for people, which is a difficult concept to break down on the internet, on Instagram.
That's right.
But we put together some analytics after she won, which was amazing, by the way. We created like over 50 pieces of original content that had over 1.5 million impressions and got shared individually over 10,000 times. We did a collaboration with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Stuff was shared by like celebrities like Chelsea Handler. It was really cool and validating to see the work and the messaging that we were doing. You know, just getting promoted by these people who, like, there's a lot of people who really care about what's going on in Wisconsin. And of course, at the end of the day, celebrities are cool, but what we really care about are the people here and the voters, and that they understand and that they're engaged. It just helps get the word out a little bit more. So, and that was all organic. You know, we didn't spend any money promoting any ads or anything like that. It was all just like people sharing stuff.
Wow. So women are a powerhouse, I just want to say.
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
we are a powerhouse sometimes. Yes.
And yeah, it's like such an important voting block, especially in like suburbs.
Suburbs, right.
A lot of the women are, those are like the maybe moderate swing voters in a swing state. And like Erin said before, a lot of political messaging is on Twitter, and now they're doing a lot of like Gen Z stuff on TikTok.
Oh my gosh.
There's not that much going on Instagram. So that's where we went, because that's where the moms are.
Wow. Right? We're not going to overlook this demographic who often gets overlooked. And I think that that sense of being overlooked feeds people's senses that like they don't know that they don't know what to talk, like what, how to talk about it. They don't know enough. They don't know how to get involved. They don't really know what they should do. They don't really talk about it with their friends. Like, I just feel like overlooking the demographic of young suburban moms feeds into that. And so we're trying to just like break that narrative and keep changing it and keep letting people involve themselves and learn and talk.
So the purpose of this podcast is, when I lost my race, it was Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area saying, you should, you know, do podcasts and keep those conversations going about hope, civility, and action. And you guys are just a perfect example of making that happen. I think you give people hope by what you're doing. And when people have hope, that means there's work to do. That's a theme that's come out of the Persisters podcast I did up in Tulsa that time. So tell me, what is it that gives you guys hope?
My kid, how close Vandella's race was, Janet's win, Biden going on the picket line. I mean, all of these things.
Oh, I know.
Like, there are these glimmers, right? Where it's, you know, we're, the good fight is worth fighting. It's hard, but when you see even almost successes occur, or you see things that are real successes, like, you know, we pursued so much effort to help promote the establishment of the Office of Gun Violence Prevention, and Biden did it. I mean, that's, you know, like we played a tiny part in helping to amplify that message. I should mention Emily Amick, who
tell us about
Emily
that. What did you do?
Phone. Oh, I mean, we pushed her. We pushed her narrative.
Yeah.
How did you push it?
So
on Instagram.
Yep, yeah. Another carousel with here's this and actually it was originally like legislation introduced by Representative Maxwell Frost out of Florida, yes, who was a survivor of the Parkland shooting. And Senator Chris Murphy out of Connecticut, who lives in the state where Sandy Hook was. And yes, Emily in Your Phone has been a wonderful connection and mentor to us. She is a former counsel, actually, to Senator Chuck Schumer, has worked on gun control in the past. She's now a lawyer for something else. I won't even try to explain what it is. And she has an account called Emily in Your Phone now, which she, because she's a lawyer and she understand and has worked on the Hill and understands these things, she, I feel like, was the original Instagram creator who was starting to break down all this stuff for regular people.
And the model, I think, really inspired the model, right, of break down the information and give a concrete action item. So a lot of our efforts to have our audiences call their representatives, be they Wisconsin or federal, we'll lean on the scripts that Emily in Your Phone has written, because she has captured, like, here's the nuance of what we want to talk about with this bill, whatever. And so, yeah, like a real foundation piece for us.
So you're getting people comfortable. Our listeners might not know about the Office of, what's it called again?
Office of Gun Violence Prevention.
Mm-hmm. That just happened last week.
Yeah.
So President Biden, I think, he created that within the White House at a federal level. We have a great Office of Violence Prevention here in Milwaukee County. I think there's different ones popping up all over the state. I've had conversations with some other organizations who are doing incredible work. Community Justice Action Fund is one of them who's doing a lot of work in this gun violence prevention space, which is so important too. And so there's different offices all over, but we haven't had a federal office that looks at all the stats, kind of helps with victims and things like that, and tries to make plans for trying to stop this and looking at all of the data and making sure that that is all set and all the data is talking to each other. And they're also going to help implement the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which was actually the huge package of gun legislation that passed shortly after Uvalde, which got bipartisan support. I think there was like at least 8, I want to say, I'll need to be fact checked on this, but Republicans who actually came on board and voted for that, which was the biggest gun safety legislation in 40 years. That is another thing that gives me hope. In a time of such intense polarization, that we could get some Republican senators to say, you know what? Yeah, we need change. We need something to happen in common sense gun reform. So having this new Office of Gun Violence Prevention is going to help the administration implement the different bills that were in that package as well.
So you're a perfect example of how what you can get done when you work together.
Absolutely,
and when you're clear about your messaging and what understanding the issue like you guys do. I think that those little successes keep you going. And I should warn our listeners, I'm always asking our listeners to take action, make calls, get in there. There's plenty to worry about. Like most recently, the possible impeachment of Janet Protasiewicz, mm-hmm. Call your legislators, tell them not to support that, make sure you've done that. And then once you're in, right? Once you get involved, you can't go back.
Yes.
Oh,
easier. Those calls that might feel nerve-wracking at first or uncomfortable, the calls get easier. It just becomes part of your mm-hmm. routine. And then, the next steps, right, kind of naturally, because you know more, because you're engaged more, you just keep getting a little more involved. And I mean, what a great
honor. You get better.
You get better. It gets easier. And I think, especially as for the parents out there and who are listening, you have to, once you have a kid, you have to advocate for them, especially when they're really little. At the doctor, at school, you are their voice. Having a voice for them in politics is really no different. It's just another avenue to advocate for them and policies that are going to best support them, keep them safe, let them be whoever they want to be. And I think it's just people are a little bit more unfamiliar with it, and it does feel intimidating at first. And I honestly think that's kind of by design. I feel like politics has been kind of gatekept for a while, especially away from women. And so we're taking that back. And I think we're saying, no, We do. What did you say the other day? I just loved. Oh, you said there's nothing like having a seat at the table.
That's right. We have to be at the table.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And women, more women need to step up and run and make our views known. And like you said, moms are a perfect voice to activate. And, you know, I think the statistics were that the young people voted at the highest level, wasn't it, in Wisconsin and as in the whole nation in the last the spring race. So I think I think it speaks a lot for people are tired of it. And I firmly believe that when people are involved, the public good is served. And we are going to have debates. We are going to have disagreements on these things. But what really baffles me is why Republicans can be out there saying they know more about family planning than we do.
Yeah.
I mean, that some of the bills that they keep introducing or voting bills that are just so outrageous, it's a small group. Mm-hmm. It is not the whole.
Right.
But if we don't speak up, then we're part of the problem. Some people say it's the NRA's fault. I say, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. We can get gun reforms passed if you stop giving the NRA that much power. Yeah. So if we can take back that power and we can talk to people, that's where the change is. I do want to point out that when getting comfortable is important, and I remember when I ran the first, last year, the first door I went to where there was a Trump person was, a little challenging. Mm-hmm. But by listening, I found that to be very effective and finding that common ground with people. And for example, knocking at doors, like one guy came at me, I was with Chris Porterfield that time, so strong that Chris was taken back by it. I wasn't, because I've been knocking on doors a lot, so I'm kind of,
I got this.
Yeah, this is okay. And then finally, after he kind of settled down, I saw toys in their living room, and I said, are you a grandpa? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the whole tone changed. We just kind of became people. Mm-hmm. And it ended really well where, we didn't agree. It was his son, I think, I was trying to reach. But that's the power in building relationships and getting comfortable and not, you don't always have to agree. You're not going to swing everybody your way, so don't worry about that. Just listen. Find out, what is it that you care about? And I don't have the answers. I'm not ever going to be smart with data like you guys are. I'm good with stories, but I'm not good with data. So find your strength and use it.
Absolutely. And we always tell people, like, you don't need to. I'm so glad that you had that good interaction and conversation with that person. But, we're not expecting people to turn voters like that into, like, voting for progressive candidates. But what we can do is have them talk to their friends who are kind of disengaged and maybe wouldn't vote.
Yes.
Or aren't involved.
Yes.
And get them more involved and get them to vote. We got so many messages from people who voted in the Supreme Court race who said, I would have never voted in a race like this before. I would have never gone out in the spring election and voted. But because you guys broke everything down for us and kept putting this messaging out, I did. And I got my sister to do it and my sister-in-law and the moms in my book club all went and voted. And that's what we're talking about. That's all we're trying to do.
Another thing that gives us hope.
Absolutely.
Right? Our messages like that, our responses like that.
That's right. That's right.
If that's happening with one person, we know that's happening with other people who might not be popping in the DMs to say so. And that's all, that's sort of all we can ask for at the end of the day, that more engagement is happening and more people are stepping up to cast their vote and share their voice.
And I hope more people do what I did, get out there and run. It was such a life-changing experience for me that I continue to this day to be amazed at how much my life has changed because I ran, even though I lost. I know all the players in Madison. Mm-hmm. I know it's also heartbreaking because I want to be there. I want to be a voice for education, for kids, for women, for families, for voting rights, all of those things that I still think are threatened in Madison. But it's great to have relationships like that. It's great to know that I'm connected. So, when I get there, or if I don't get there, whatever, I'm always going to be able to talk to people down there. Not only that, I got a great network of friends here that I can, because my husband's paralyzed, our life can get complicated, and I'm always serving on committees, and I'm out there going to Madison doing things like that. So once in a while I need help here. And I got this whole new network of friends.
Yes.
We share values.
And it's so great connect with people in the different, in your community about who are doing this work. And I think something else about you, just meeting all the different people who are in the Capitol and in the scene and getting to know them, is the realization that, like, they're just people too. You know, they've been elected and they have important jobs, but they're just people too. They're moms, dads, friends. You know, some have long political histories and some don't, you know, and there, it's a totally different mix of people. And we don't need to be scared to pick up the phone and call them or to try to have conversations with them. We're all just trying to make this world like a better place for our families, communities. Definitely the ways of getting that done are different. But, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people, you know, want the same thing.
So it's... for me, when my grandsons were here, I've been watching them since they were born, and they're now 11, 9, and 6. And, you know, going back to what you said about your kids give you hope, those kids do give me hope. They're pretty smart, and they know what's going on. They do. And they were here when that attack on the Capitol happened. And we actually had the TV on because I like to listen to President's speeches, and we were all watching that happen, and that drives me. It really drives me for change. That and the fact that when I knocked on 4,000 doors, I listened to people. I know they share our values. If we could drop the labels for a little bit, and that's why I was, you know, when you talk about messaging, I tended to not even bring up a party when I knocked on doors. I did just say, you know, this is what I care about. What you care about, let's fix the broken political system. And it starts with me, you know, am I being civil? And at the same time, that doesn't mean to be passive. It means to be very much active and out there and listening and conversing with people. For those who don't know, I signed up to go down to Madison with a gun violence prevention group last week. And there was Kate at my table. So it was just wonderful. And we had to go to knock on doors. It's been a while since I've done that.
Yeah.
Gone to the Capitol to talk directly face-to-face to people. But it felt so good, didn't it?
Yes. There's, you know, something special about being in that building and being part of the process and talking to people and seeing all the people that came. I know I had to take off of work. I'm sure many people there also had to take off of work or find childcare. And the fact that they prioritized this and spent a whole day in Madison learning about how we can keep our community safer and talking to legislators about it. I mean, it's the epitome of hope.
It is. And there should be no reason why we can't get gun control measures passed. Our children are not safe in our schools. Our teachers are not safe. When you said to me, you go back to school and you always wonder, is it going to be my school now? And instead of taking guns away, I love how you message that. We are, we're training our kids to protect themselves. It shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. That in itself is a certain trauma. So the more active we can get for our children, the better. There's a lot of work to be done out there.
Yeah. And this whole younger generation gives me hope too. They've unfortunately grown up doing active shooter drills and, you know, seeing things like the January 6th attack. And I think they want something better. And they're much smarter and more aware than I think a lot of adults give them credit for. And, it gives me hope to watch them kind of grow up and start to vote more.
I couldn't agree more. It's you guys give me hope.
Oh.
Motherhood for Good gives me a lot of hope to see more people getting in there, taking risks. It's so much about taking risks and saying, I don't know how this is going to go, but I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
And get in there and do whatever it is I can do. It just feels good. It just takes that depressing side of life away when you get in there and you get involved. I liken it to, I've told this story before, so sorry, listeners. These guys might not have heard it, but when my husband was paralyzed and, you know, it was like an overnight thing, he fell on a job site and severed his spinal cord and, you know, here he was never going to walk again. And I was miserable for about 2 years. It was the same year that the ADA was signed into law. And it was really a rough first couple of years. And then I joined the League of Women Voters. And the question in my mind changed. It wasn't, I had studied the laws by now. I had figured out that talked to legislators. It was like, wait a minute. The question wasn't, do they have to make things accessible? The question is, how? How can I help them make things accessible? So if we could transition that question for our listeners right now, the question shouldn't be, do I have to get involved? You should be asking yourself, how can I get involved? What is it that I can do to make things different or better in my world, where even if it's a local school board race, a village board, or a city council, or if you're really interested in the national political scene, we're going to have a very heated presidential election coming up in just a year, a little over a year from now. So ask yourself that. What can I do?
Yeah, we didn't even get into the school board stuff. We got to talk more about that. Yeah. We could probably do a whole series with you on that.
As a last thing,
we want to hear from you about your knowledge and expertise when it comes to school boards.
Yes.
But to your point about like the plea to get involved, I think another thing that we try to emphasize is that, one, your involvement needs to be sustainable for your life, mm-hmm. right? So involving yourself to whatever capacity that means for your life, that the goal is not to have people suddenly leap in and have it. We're not asking everybody to do what we did last fall.
No.
But I think sometimes people are like nervous that that's what they're being asked to do. When people are like, well, get involved with your local elections, they think that suddenly they're going to have a second job or something. It's like, no. Make it be sustainable, whatever that means to you, but do something, right? And that's going to feel good and better.
Yep.
No matter the result.
Sometimes that's sitting down with your kids for 15 minutes and writing out postcards and letting them color on them.
Even if it's one or two. Yep. I could not knock on doors at the level I did for my campaign for Janet, but I made sure I got out and just did one or two doors because I felt better getting involved. Right. So I think that's kind of the thing. That's what gives me so much hope. It's when I take that little action. I mean, my dishes don't always get done. But I also
might never get done.
I've never gone out at home ever. I know, but that's not important. But I told my husband though, and this is good to do too. I told him the minute we agreed I should run. I said, you have veto power though. Mm. If at any point during this campaign, and he knows that in life, that if he needs me, I'm there for him and nothing else matters. You know, he's paralyzed, he's complicated, and we're all getting older. I hate to admit that, but
Yeah, well, you could have fooled us about that, that last one.
My energy level is still there just because I think it's important. And I'm going to carve out time. So for you, really, for you moms who deserve a better political environment, it shouldn't be what it is. So I will continue to work on my little civility project here and action so that we can get the will of the people to be served by the political processes. I could keep asking questions, but I can see we're almost out of time here. So any final thoughts or things you would like to say to our audience?
We just so appreciate you having us on and having the chance to talk to your audience. We respect so much the campaign that you ran and the work that you've done since then. And I personally feel so lucky to have gotten to know you, over the past couple of months. And I think we just, again, encourage people to get involved and to just get comfortable being a little bit uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Stretching yourself a little bit outside of your comfort zone. And, we think it's like the perfect antidote to anxiety when you're all stressed out and all this stuff is going on and you feel like nothing you do matters. Yes, it does. And if you think that you don't know enough to talk about these things, yes, you do. You know your kids, you know your family, you know your values, and that's a perfectly good enough start to get going on the work. So,
yeah. Well, I want to echo the thanks, what a gift you are to this community and the state. So I feel really honored to be getting to know you and excited to see whatever you keep doing, we'll be there rallying behind you.
Thank you.
But just it takes all of us to do any of this. Mm-hmm. And the discomfort you know, the note Kate offered of like, get comfortable being a little uncomfortable. There we go. Nailed it. Like, however much discomfort somebody might feel stepping outside of their comfort zone to get politically involved is going to be better than adverse outcomes in policies or terrible decision making by local or federal government officials. Like, we can all do a little bit and turn the ship around, you know?
We sure can. I'm just a grandma. I'm just a mom. Or you could say, I'm a grandma and I'm a mom, and you don't mess with Grandma Lou.
Absolutely.
Don't mess with Grandma
Lou. Don't mess
Lou.
With
That needs with to be your sign off. And don't mess with Grandma Lou.
Well, thank you for doing podcast. Thank you for all the great work you do, balancing everything and taking care of your family. I feel good about the future.
Yeah,
with moms for motherhood for good out there doing all this work. And so look, check out their Instagram site, get involved through them, and share that with all the other moms that you know. And thank you all for listening. We appreciate you very much. Thanks.
Listen to this and more uninterrupted. Listen on the Civic Media app, available on Apple and Android.